Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, imported foods from around the world, featuring a selection of international European cheeses, olive oil, balsamic vinegar, spices, and more. World Harvest Foods, at the intersection of 6th and University Avenue in Champaign, encourages you to join them in supporting public radio.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have here back again on the program Sandy Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month, always on the, It's the second Tuesday
second
of the month.
Second Tuesday of the month.
She is here. We start these programs in the spring, and she is here every month through the summer into the early part of the fall. And it is your opportunity to ask questions about things that grow in the home landscape, trees and shrubs, grass, things that flower, stuff you can eat, things that's just ornamental, houseplants too. Any and all of that is certainly fine. Maybe you're having a problem and you need some advice, or you have any kind of sort of general plant question. I know she will do her best to give you an answer. 333-9455, that's the number here for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. And that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that's 800-222-9455. So 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be in here rather than outside.
It's kind of unpleasant. It's kind of unpleasant. And I think that what we're thinking is here this afternoon, our heat index is going to get into the danger category.
Mm.
So it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. So, yes, I think anything that you can do to find a cool space to be in, at least for this afternoon, is the time to do it. And I really need to cut my grass, so I don't know that I'd be able to get myself to do that. I'm thinking, well, if I go home and in the afternoon, I think, well, it's not too bad. Maybe I can do it. I don't know. Anyway, we have several callers here getting lined up, and we'll start right in. And the first, I believe, would be in Champaign, and line number one right here. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I planted some beans, and the leaves have just been eaten, every single leaf, not totally, just, you know, holes. And I was wondering two things. What kind of bug would do that? And second, will it affect the beans?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, will it affect beans coming up?
Right, right. Well, I these are green beans, I take it, right?
Yes.
And there's actually several different beetles that could possibly be feeding on it. There is one actually bean leaf beetle that actually does a pretty good job of wiping out beans. And your question is it going to affect the beans? And that's a good question because it's one of those things that, you know, a little bit of damage as in, oh, I'd say you could probably get up to maybe 30% of the leaf maybe is gone. I wouldn't imagine you're going to see a whole lot of problems with the beans themselves. You know, you could still get a halfway decent crop with that. If you start getting a lot worse than that, then you might actually see a reduction in the crop or, you know, problems with that. So they really can go through quite a bit of damage before. So it's even more than that, you're thinking?
The first year I've had that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's not good news.
Yeah, so that depending on what you want to do, it gets kind of tough, if you're trying to do anything organic kinds of things. You could try some of the floating, what are called floating row covers. The problems with those is you still have to let some of the pollinators and stuff in, so sometimes that's kind of tough. So it's a little difficult sometimes to try and control some of those beetle problems organically.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, let's go on to line number two, and this caller is in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have a flower bed of day lilies, and when we first put them in, they got the flowers would keep coming up during the year, but now it's gotten very crowded and maybe overgrown, and we get one crop of flowers. And then for the rest of the season, like from now on, we don't get any flowers. Mm-hmm. And there's these little, I don't know what you call them, they're hard things at the top, about the size of a plum.
Probably the seed capsule.
Yeah. And some people have said that you have to clean it out or something, so I didn't know quite what to do.
Yeah. Well, you probably hit on exactly what the problem is that they're really getting too crowded, and you will see a reduction in flowering sometimes, especially with some of those rebloomers. So it's probably time. I wouldn't necessarily do it now, although daylilies are so tough. I think you could probably do it now and they'd be fine. I'd probably be more inclined maybe to wait when it cools off a little bit more into end of August, into September. That'd probably be a little bit better if you'd wait and then actually divide them at that time.
Right. In other words, would we pull any up, or how do you do it?
You just dig up the whole clump, and it'll be this big, huge clump. And dig up the clump, and depending on the size of the clump, usually you can cut it in at least into fourths. And with daylilies, they're kind of interesting. Actually, if you hit them with a heavy stream of water, they actually kind of pull apart, you know, very easily. And you can divide them down as far as you want. If you want to have individual crowns, you could do that. If you wanted, most of the time people are going to have, you know, you might have maybe six or seven crowns within a division.
Right.
That makes sense. So, and that's fine. And then you just replant them. You probably have more than you ever want. So you start giving away to the neighbors.
Okay. In other words, you take each clump up and you divide it up.
Right.
Then you replant what's there.
Right.
And then you'll have extra ones because there's only a certain space.
Right.
So you give everybody you know some.
Yeah, basically. That's it. And so you want to have some space, obviously, in between. I'd have at least 18 inches between the plants once you replant them.
Oh, 18 inches?
Yeah, I'd give them plenty of space to move out at that point.
Yeah, because there's no space at all now.
Oh, yeah, see, they're just way too crowded.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And the next caller is in Champaign, and that's line number 3. Hello.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions. The first is about some clematis vines that flower really nicely and then seem to crash shortly afterwards, look dead. And what I'm wondering is there any organic fix for these, or would cutting them back hard at the end of the season help them to rejuvenate next year, or just I'm not sure what to do with them.
Mm-hmm. So do they come out of it once they crash? Do you start getting new?
They look pretty shabby the whole season after they bloom.
But there's still some green stuff, or they get some new green stuff?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Probably what's happened is there's a thing called clematis wilt.
Uh-huh.
And usually we see it, normally it's, you know, they're coming up and they're looking good, and a lot of times they're even starting to flower and stuff, and then like you say, they just crash. They seem to just die overnight kind of thing. And there's lots of theories. They're not quite sure if it's a you know, pathogen, some kind of fungal pathogen or something. So there's lots of theories out there. I don't think they've ever quite hit upon exactly what it is, or whether it's just environmental or whatever. It's probably a fungal pathogen, I'm guessing. What they do suggest is, number one, there are some varieties that tend to be resistant to it.
Okay.
So sometimes just getting a different variety is good.
Uh-huh.
And then also the suggestion is when you plant them, actually plant them an inch or two deep, which isn't normally what we would do.
Yeah.
And that seems to protect some of those crowns at the base, so that when they do crash, they'll send up some new shoots.
Okay.
And so hopefully they'll kind of rejuvenate themselves just by sending up
the... Would cutting them back hard at the end of the season hurt the plant if I stay above the crown?
At the end of the season you're talking about?
Yeah, once we're going into fall.
That really isn't a problem if you want to do it that way, sure.
Okay.
You know, just to sort of clean it up, you're talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not really the issue. I think there's something else going on there that we haven't quite identified yet, but...
Okay. The other question I have is a very old honeysuckle shrub that's gotten leggy and so on. Is it savable, again, if I prune it pretty hard? Would it come back quickly and... look pretty good after a hard pruning?
You can't hardly kill them.
That's okay.
It would be a good one to practice on. If you're reluctant to prune things, just start pruning back honeysuckles because they will come back with a vengeance.
Would you wait till the end of the season, or any time is good? Or
yeah, I would probably, depending on, you know, you might do it, I'd probably wait either next year if you wanted to, either wait till right after they bloom so you still enjoy the blooms,
okay.
Or I'd probably do it again. I think you could do it any time, and they'd come back without any problem whatsoever.
Okay.
But ideally, we'd probably do some that major pruning, like in the early spring, like March and April.
Okay, Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here in the spring and summer and early fall once a month to talk about garden issues. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line. Go anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455.
You know, we had the question about, if I could just interrupt here a minute, we had the question about the bean leaf beetle, and I was just looking through our new home, yard, and garden pest guide, trying to see if there was something else listed. And they do list something I think is kind of interesting for bean leaf beetles. They say plant late enough so the farmer's soybeans emerge before the garden beans.
So the beetles go and eat the soybeans and
basically,
don't bother yours?
Basically, you got it. So maybe actually this woman that was having problems with the bean leaf beetles, actually maybe planting them a little bit later might not have nearly the problem. Mm. So
I assume that there are treatments that you can. Are there things that you can spray?
There certainly are insecticides. Seven and Rotenone are the two insecticides that you certainly could use. Okay. You know, people wanted to go that route, and they certainly are effective, and it'd be one of those things that, and you're probably only going to have to apply maybe once or twice. You're probably not going to have to do this regular thing.
Okay. But at this point, it might be a little late if there's been that much damage.
But, you know, they're pretty good at regenerating. I mean, once you give them a chance, they grow pretty, you know, they love this weather, and they really start growing pretty fast. So I think if she could, you know, try and take care of, you know, if she wanted to and go ahead and use an insecticide, that probably would certainly help, and then she'd still get a bean crop this year.
Okay. Well, let's talk with somebody in Lafayette. Line four. Hello.
Hello. I come pretty discouraged, almost defeated, from trying to eliminate the weeds in my yard. The broad-leafed dandelion, purslane, violet, and the creeping Charlie that we're not supposed to mention on this program.
Who said that?
I've been giving them, as directed, 2,4-D, supposedly killing weeds, but not touching grass, but it doesn't seem to touch anything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
From the plastic bottle that you put on the end of the hose.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I've opened the valve properly and followed the directions, and nothing at all seems to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I guess a couple things. I think we need a support group for you.
Yes.
take care of your lawn weed depression. I know sometimes it really can be very frustrating. I don't mean to make light of it, but I know it's real frustrating sometimes. I guess I think about a couple things. It sounds like you've applied this more than once. Is that the impression I'm getting?
The directions say you get only twice, and after that, stop.
Right.
So I've done twice, and I'm out of ideas.
Okay. And the weeds were actively growing when you did this?
Mm-hmm.
So that was an issue.
And it didn't get rained on or mowed.
Right. And was it particularly hot when you were?
Oh, just regular summer. Just regular summer weather that so far hasn't been too hot.
Right. Because there is a problem. Once it gets above 85 degrees, then a lot of times the herbicides don't work very well. Because the plants kind of shut down, and you know, so it doesn't work very well. So I will tell you, at high temperatures, often you don't get very good control. Or if the plant isn't actively growing, you don't get very good control. I guess the other things I would wonder a little bit about, you know, the hose and sprayers I think are very handy. It's a convenient way to apply stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The only problem is, you know, that is a plastic, so it may not be quite as accurate, I will say, as maybe some things.
Well, I wondered whether it sprayed reliably.
Well, you don't get a good indication of exactly how much is being put out at any one time. I think there's some, you know, most of the time it's just fine, but maybe in your situation you may find that actually using something a little bit different, either using a regular spray or granular or something else, might be a little bit more effective for you.
Is granular any good? I've tried it with herbicides, and they just roll off.
Well, you know, sometimes it is listed as that you should water it in afterwards.
Yeah.
So there is something to be said for that. I guess the other thing, I'd kind of go the other route, too, is I'd kind of wonder why you're getting so many weeds in your lawn. So I would wonder about, you know, just some regular maintenance kinds of things. You know, are you fertilizing the lawn?
Fertilizing. The grass seems pretty good. It's quite strong, and I'm chasing it twice a week.
But it feels that way.
It's out running me.
Yeah. It feels that way.
The grass seems in quite vigorous condition. Mm-hmm. So are the weeds.
Because usually the weeds are coming in because the grass is open, you know, that there's open areas somewhere in there. So I guess I wouldn't give up on the herbicide. And actually what we've found is, I know it's kind of frustrating now, but what we have found is that actually, you know, applying herbicides, broadleaf herbicides in the fall is actually a very effective time. Like in September and October is very effective for a lot of the broadleaf weeds. So I wouldn't give up on that part of it. But I'd also wonder, I'd also really check, make sure you don't have too much thatch. Just really think about, you know, are there any things I can do to really encourage the grass to actually grow better and fill in spots that maybe it hadn't been filling in the past?
This year, with all the rain, it filled in beautifully, even under the maple tree.
Right. Well, I certainly wouldn't give up on, you may want to try a different formulation, and I wouldn't give up on actually doing it in the fall. You may find that it's a little bit more effective for you.
You suppose there is reasonable suspicion that it's just not, the hose end simply isn't dispensing enough.
Well, again,
and perhaps I could go beyond the two sprayings allowed me on the direct.
No. We don't want to do that. Because we always have to remember that those pesticide labels are legal documents, and it is illegal to use it against label directions. So we always have to go by whatever the label says. That's what we do. So we always have to do that. Keep that in mind no matter what. So we don't want to do extra sprayings. But I would think that you may find you get better because you have more control when you're actually doing a spray, mm-hmm. as opposed to using the hose end sprayers. I will tell you that.
Oh, so you mean a pump sprayer? Or
something? Right, correct.
Okay. Most of these, I take it, are perennial weeds that would benefit this way.
Right. Well, purslane is an annual and comes back every year from seed. I think that was the one that you named that I can remember that is an annual.
Okay.
And really for all of these, and I was going to mention the whole thing about weeds, is one of the things is don't let them go to seed. Now, obviously, you're mowing these, but in any situation, if you can do anything to not let them go to seed, that's very important.
Okay. So pump spray, 240 again in fall.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, right, correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
good
thank
luck.
Thank you. So again, just to underscore this, that probably the least, if you want to try to treat weeds in the lawn, the least effective time is going to be high summer when it's really hot. Either you want to get on it in the spring, or if you didn't, then you can do it in the fall. But then, of course, your control is going to, what you hope is your control is going to then really go into effect the next year, in the next growing season. Is that right? Or will it actually all do stuff?
Oh,
do something right there in the fall.
Sure. So it'll still, the herbicides will still work in the fall.
Oh,
I guess
okay.
That's the big time. And actually, they've found that in the fall, you know, that's a time when plants are a lot of sort of getting ready for winter. So they're actually taking a lot of things into their roots. And so that's exactly what you want to happen with the herbicide is actually they take it into the plant. So I have found that to be much more effective. And it's just very tough to try to do anything when it's this hot. It just plants shut down for the most part. And the herbicides tend to not work as well.
And you think that the dry, the granular things apply better. That is the thing you get that little wagon, then you walk back and forth, and you put the stuff out.
I think either that or just the pump up sprayer types. I think anytime you do anything through a hose end sprayer, where you actually attach it to the hose, that's just a little piece of plastic in there that's sort of regulating it. And how much actually goes through at any one time, we really don't know. I mean, it's certainly, you know, they've tried to do as much as they could in the formulations as far as getting it out properly and that kind of thing. But still, there's a certain amount of faith there that at any one moment, you're getting the correct amount of herbicide or fertilizer or whatever going through.
And if you put on one of those granular products then, and if you decide that you're going to wait until it rains for that to get watered in, how quickly does it have to rain for that to work? Or does that really not matter how long it is? It just as long as you get a good rain eventually to get it.
Well, I think just for a lot of reasons, I would think you'd want to get it in the plant as soon as you can. Mm-hmm. Just for effectiveness reasons, for a lot of different reasons, I guess, besides just effectiveness. And so I would say if it's going to rain within that day, then insect, and that might be fine. But if there's just a slight chance, I'd probably go ahead and water it in. Again, read the directions, and it'll tell you whether it really needs to be watered in or not. Or you certainly can use the liquid sprays, where you actually use a pump-up spray and spray it on that way. And then once it spray dries, then you're pretty well set. So.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. Chicago, line one. Hello.
Hello. I have four questions. First is, what's the best environment for hen and chicks? Should that plant be in full sun or part shade? The next is, what is tapestry planting? The second one is, what are autumn crocuses, and should they be put in the spring to produce in the fall, or how do you do those? And my final question is, you might have get the hint that I'm starting to plan for fall, is that the only way I can put bulbs in is to put a plant on and spare the squirrels who really like my yard, is to put another plant on top. Someone calls it double dipping. And last year I did it with annual mums on top of the bulbs. Mm-hmm. And all my bulbs came up. The squirrels didn't get a one of them. But I don't really like the chrysanthemums, and they didn't really like my yard. They were pretty ugly. Is there something else I can put on top of my bulbs this fall?
Okay. So hen and chicks. you know, hen and chicks are one of those that really, they're succulent plants. So they just need well-drained soil. And they'll take some shade. They do fine in full sun.
Okay.
But they like well-drained soil. That's probably the biggest thing. You don't want them to be anywhere where they're going to be really wet.
Okay.
And they're not going to take full shade very well either.
Okay,
so,
well-drained.
Pretty tough plants. Did you say tapestry?
Yes, I saw it. There was an article about it in the Home and Garden section of the Tribune. Someone was giving a lecture on it.
And it's a particular plant or planting method?
It's a planting method.
Tapestry planting.
And I got the feeling it's like the plants sort of run together like a weave. But I don't know. Maybe it was just that the name is so romantic that I'm imagining what this could be. But I've never heard of it before.
Yeah, I've never heard of it, other than, you know, like the bedding plant kind of thing, where they actually would make patterns, you know, out of bedding plants.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I've never heard of that planting method before. So maybe we'll have to look into that to see what that is.
Okay.
And your other, now I'm trying to think.
Autumn crocuses.
Yes. Traditionally, we'd probably go ahead and plant them in the fall, because that's usually when they're available. So you'd plant them in the fall. And
they won't come up till the next fall then?
No, actually, a lot of times they'll go ahead and bloom that fall.
Okay.
That you put them in. Mm-hmm. And then you're pretty well fine from there. But they're really pretty. They're fun to have. And I'm trying to think what your other question. Oh, the squirrel question.
Yes. What plant? Do I have to put an annual on top of a bulb, or could I put a perennial on top of the bulb?
Depends on probably what the perennial is. Sometimes you can do interplanting, and I don't know how well that's going to work with the squirrels, though. Interplanting would be you're actually just putting them near each other, not really putting one on top of the other.
I have to put them on top, because this particular squirrel feels that my job is to dig holes to put his peanuts in, and he actually removes whatever I put in and replaces it with a peanut.
So, maybe he's giving you a gift.
yeah, sure. Anyway, this has been a very effective method. As I said,
yeah.
All my flowers came up this spring.
I think you'd have a hard time putting a perennial on top and still have the bulb do very well.
So any annual?
I think it's going to have to be an annual, something that's going to tie back.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for the call. Let us continue here. And I think the next person up is in Champaign, and that would be line number two. Hello.
Hello. Before I get to my question, I'll just say that I think you'll find that tapestry planting is more a design technique than a planting method.
A design technique? Is it like interweaving the plants, as
well,
you were saying?
I don't know what you mean by interweaving, but you might diagram out what, you know, you how you want a flower bed to look and colors you want here and there. I mean, that's kind of a fancy name, I think.
Because I thought that's what we do anyway.
That's right. And I say that's kind of a fancy, and it does sound much more romantic, but it is more of a design technique than actually a planting method.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Then the other thing, I was listening to your caller with all his weed problems, and there was one thing that I didn't hear mentioned, and he says he's mowing twice a week and so forth, and something as simple as raising his mower one notch or two, if he can bear it, and letting that grass be a little longer, the grass itself will help shade out the weeds. And as it's getting in the heat of the summer, it's probably better to not cut your grass too short. That does stress it a bit. And if he just works on making his grass healthy, it will work to help crowd out the weeds.
Right, right. And actually, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, and I should
Thank
have mentioned
you very
that.
Much.
That absolutely good point. And you're right anyway. That in that other suggestion, the fact that because it's so hot,
right.
it's a good time to go ahead and raise your mower height anyway. But that's what I was kind of wondering about, because if you have a weed problem, you always kind of have to wonder what's going on with the grass. And I didn't ask him how short he was mowing the grass, but you're absolutely right. Maybe raising the mower height might help immensely.
Well, the standard advice is that what you should cut off no more than how much?
A third at
any one time. So they're probably...
Some people mow it really
a lot.
Short.
Well, yeah.
But some people really mow it short. Yeah. I mean, at this time of year, it should be at least 2.5 inches tall, if not 3.
Yeah.
I mean,
okay.
And for most people, that seems pretty tall.
Yeah.
And then in the fall, you certainly can lower it if you're not comfortable with that height. But that is a good suggestion. Is that a lot of times, if the grass is then growing more vigorously, then it'll take over those areas where the weeds are coming in.
Okay. Cell phone caller here, line 3. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Yes.
A question about using grass clippings as a mulch. Is that a good thing to do?
Grass clippings as a mulch. It certainly can be. Probably just a couple of suggestions with grass mulches. I'd never put it really thick at any one time, so I would probably put it down maybe an inch or so thick, and then wait, let that sort of dry, and then put another inch, because otherwise you get this big clump if you put several inches down at one time. So I'd put it down in thin layers over a period of time, and that's fine. I'd also, if you are using herbicides like the 2,4-D type products, we generally recommend that you've mowed at least 3 times before you start using the grass clippings.
Okay,
but they make good. They certainly make good mulch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. I guess it's. I remember once somebody, one of your predecessors, pointing out the fact that grass clippings are mostly water.
Yeah, they really
are. So that
are.
You really don't get. I mean, that's great, and whatever gets returned to the soil, that's fine. But they're not going to have a. They're not going to impart much in the way of nutrient value if you think their breakdown is going to be good that way. But if all you're interested in is keeping down weeds, maybe,
right.
or holding in soil moisture, well, that's probably.
Right.
Fine.
But they do have a certain amount of nitrogen in there. So you actually are adding a little nitrogen back into the soil. So they do have some nutrients in there. But you're right. A lot of it is. So it actually, you know, over a period of time, it really, you know, you end up with quite a bit. But then as it.
And once it dries.
Yeah, once it dries.
Down,
it's fairly.
Yeah. Okay. Sandy Mason is here. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County and is here once a month in the spring, the summer, the early fall. We talk about lawn and garden care, and your questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign Urbana folks. Toll free 800-222-9455. And here's a caller in Urbana, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Get this radio off. Yes, about the bulb planting, there is another way of going about that. Plant the bulbs and then put a roll of chicken wire over it, and then cover the chicken wire either with soil or mulch. It can actually be removed the next year.
Right, that certainly is another suggestion. Right, you're absolutely right. That certainly is something that people can do. I kind of got the impression she wanted to put flowers on top of it just for the look, but no, that's can be very effective.
I wonder if they won't go after them even with the flower planting. My squirrels are probably all college graduates.
Maybe that's it. It seemed to be working with her, putting the mums over on the top the way she talked. So maybe at least for her that worked out pretty good. But yeah, you're right. It depends on the on the squirrels. But yeah, good suggestion. Glad you mentioned that. It'll be bulb planting time soon.
I also have plant bulbs that I put in pots, and I found that I have to use something like... the chicken wire over the pot, either that or sometimes I think they're probably marble chips also seem to help after the plant is up.
Oh, you put rocks around them then, or?
Well, that seems to work well with my tropical hibiscus and the oleanders, because otherwise they go in and they plant acorns. It turns
they're
into
busy.
A jungle.
Busy, busy, busy guys.
They're very helpful little creatures.
Right.
Anyway,
you're trying to reforest your area.
I think that's it. I'm succeeding.
All right. Well,
thanks for the thought.
Thank you very much. Okay. Let's go on here to someone on a cell phone on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I have a question about my lilac bush, which I've had for 6 years, and it has never flowered. What can I do?
Mm-hmm. Is it getting plenty of sun?
Yeah, it's on the south side of the house.
So plenty of sun, and it's growing well?
Oh, yeah.
Do you ever see flower, you know, something that kind of looks like this big bud on the end? Do you ever, like, see them? Don't even see that kind of stuff.
No.
Do you prune it at all, or?
Not really.
Okay, because lilacs are one of those that they put their flower buds on the year before they flower.
Okay.
So it's one of those if for some reason they either the buds die over the winter time or they get pruned off in either you know fall or early spring, then you don't have any flower buds.
I've never pruned it.
Yeah. So I would wonder if there's some. And then how old did you say it is? It's like 6 or 7.
About 6 years ago it was given to us. Yeah.
Yeah. So how tall is it at this point?
Probably about 5 feet.
Yeah. It certainly should be flowering by now.
Okay. What's wrong with
it? I know. You need to have a long talk with it, as in either you flower or you're out of here. Usually threatening works very well for me.
Should I just, like, get rid of it? It's never going to flower ever?
It really should be. I would really wonder, the latter part of the season here, I would look at the ends of the stems, and there should be a big bud. Should be this really kind of swollen, that looks bigger than all the other buds.
Okay.
And that would tell you at least that it's forming flowers. And then if it still doesn't, you don't see anything like that, it's not even forming flowers. So there's something wrong. I would either, you know, you might try fertilizing it. Sometimes that helps. I'd make sure it has some phosphorus in it to try and encourage some flowering. You might try that. Again, I'd look for those big flower buds, and then if you do see those, but then it still doesn't bloom next spring, then for one reason or another, the flower buds are getting killed over the winter time.
Okay.
And it may be just one of those that maybe it's just a little finicky and needs a little bit more time to flower, or it just for some reason those flower buds are not as hardy as they should be, and you may want to think about a different variety. But it definitely should be flowering by now. You're absolutely right.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. You know, I've been talking nicely to my plants.
See? You're talking too nice.
I have this hydrangea. It's been this is the second summer it's been in the ground. It still has not flowered for me, and I always speak very nicely to it.
See, it worked for my apples. I said, if you guys don't do something, you're out of here. And the next year, I got all kinds of apples.
And I've been saving all my wrath for the rabbits. I'm telling you, this rabbit thing, something has to be done.
I know.
Something has to be done about it now. And I'm ready to put out a want ad for a coyote or something. And I never thought of myself as being a violent person, but I would shoot them if I could. I would do it. And they're getting worse every year. I think that I'm convinced that the last couple of years, there are just more and more of them. And it's getting to be a big problem. And I don't know what exactly we do.
I'm not sure what to tell you on that one.
I don't know. I've tried all those things. I've tried the things you spray on the plants to make them taste bad. They don't work very well. Stuff that you put on the ground, that doesn't work. And I know that what you have said, what everybody says, well, you know, the only surefire thing really is a fence. That's the only really thing that you can do if you can't shoot them, which I would, but I can't. So I don't know. I don't know what to do about it.
I know. It is a tough thing. And it always seems to be in the very early part of the season when I always seem to have more problems. I think when the babies are first coming out and they're really kind of wandering around trying stuff out. And so sometimes if you can get them through that first month or so, maybe with fencing or whatever, then sometimes you actually can take it off. Hmm. You know, take the fencing off because I know it's not all that terribly attractive.
They still, though, it seems that in my yard, that still here and there,
they're still picking on. Last year,
I planted some snapdragons and they did really well, and the rabbits left them alone. I thought, okay, cool, snapdragons. And this year, it seems that they go through and they eat the buds off.
Yeah.
And I have the plants that look fine. I have green foliage on the plants, but I'm not getting enough flowers because the rabbits are eating the buds. I'm telling you. It's bad.
Yeah, I know it is.
It's very bad.
I wish I had a good solution for that one.
Well, okay. We'll work on it. If anybody has one out there, give us a call.
A surefire solution.
Exactly. All right, well, I'll tell you what my surefire solution, it would be a 22. That would be it. But I can't do that where I live. Okay. Let's go on.
Do you feel better, David?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
Line 2 is next. Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Actually, my question was going to be about rabbits. You already discussed it. And my rabbits have absolutely eaten everything, and I generally plant enough for all of us that they ate everything this year. So apparently there's no particular solution.
Yeah, I wish I could say that there are things that you can use. And there certainly are some repellents out there, and sometimes those will work, but it depends on your the population. If you have a whole bunch of rabbits, they're going to eat right through the repellents.
Well, and actually, I used the repellents, and it made the whole backyard smell terrible.
Oh, really? What
did the rabbit pick? It's coyote urine, I think.
Oh, how lovely.
I don't know. That's what it said on the bottle. But
it probably was.
Well, and the rabbits would pick around the leaves that had the residue on it and eat around it plants anyway. So.
And you got to enjoy the smell.
That's right.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good solution.
Let me ask you another question. In terms of hibiscus, I have a couple of hibiscus. Will they winter over? Should I bring them in? Will they bloom over the winter? What's the best way to handle those?
The problem with hibiscus is there's several different kinds. So is this the tropical one? It's got the shiny leaf and big flower.
Yes.
Okay. Those are not hardy. There is a tropical hibiscus, and those are the ones that you often see a lot of the stores and stuff they'll have, and with the big flowers and all that kind of stuff. Those don't winter over, but you can bring them indoors. They actually do fairly well as indoor plants.
Okay.
You certainly can do that. And then just bring them out again next year.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I wish I had a better solution for the rabbit thing.
So do we all.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, good luck. Bye. I also tried some stuff that smelled like mothballs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sprinkled the stuff around the plants, and then the entire yard smelled like mothballs,
which wasn't really
pleasant. I don't know, how the rabbits felt about it, but I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I felt like moving.
Yeah. I've heard that suggestion before, too, and that's always was my thought I don't want to smell this stuff.
Yeah,
so
no.
I wouldn't.
It's really,
and that's interesting about the coyote urine, because I'd heard that before about using that, but I'd never tried that. So that's interesting. They sort of just picked around it and didn't seem to be maybe quite as effective as it had been reported to be.
Okay, Indiana, line number
ongoing
one.
Ongoing saga.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. Two questions dealing with pruning. I have a lilac bush that must be quite mature. It's easy, 8 feet tall, and it flowers, though. Then I have a grape that doesn't produce any grapes, but is growing incredibly. It's almost like a foot a day sometimes. And I was wondering how far aggressive can I be on pruning the grape arbor without quote unquote killing it, because it's a nice partition between the next house and the lilac bush, same thing there. Just wondering how far back I can go, if at all, this stage of the game.
Right. And really with both of these, this really isn't probably good timing for either one of them, but really for both of those, you can really be pretty aggressive. And grapes really need to be pruned hard every year. You may be removing as much as 80% of all those, long runners that they have. You really remove a lot of stuff, because that's, if you think about it, why do people have all those grapevine wreaths? It's because you're always pruning all this stuff off. So, but normally that would be done in, late February, early March is normally where we'd really, really cut back the grapes. And actually the University of Illinois, we have a really nice publication about the small fruits, growing small fruits in the home orchard that kind of details, what you're supposed to do as far as grapes. But don't be afraid to cut them way back, because they certainly need it.
Well, in some sense, this is, sort of subjective. In terms of, can you give me a sense you shouldn't cut anything larger than your thumb width, something like that? I mean, that's what I guess I'd be asking for.
Okay. Well, grapes produce off of last year's new growth.
Okay.
And the new growth, normally it's like pencil size or so, maybe a little bit bigger than a pencil.
Okay.
And you actually cut that back, and so you have so many buds per, of those vines, and then off of those vines, then you'll get these new shoots, and then your grapes are going to come off of that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Yeah.
Pruning is almost one of those things you need to see pictures.
Or you need to look at the plant. About pruning, I've discovered that.
Yeah, but you just count how many buds, and right off the top of my head, I don't remember, but you count how many buds on that, and then you cut back to that, and so you leave so many buds.
Okay.
And I think it's like 10 to 15, I don't remember right off the top of my head. And then you leave those, and then you're consider for next year on which where your new growth is going to come from for next year. And so you kind of have a plan of, and I assume you have this, you have it on an arbor or something. So it's
just on a, well, it's not a super tall fence, but it runs approximately 75 feet, I'd say.
Okay. Okay.
The fence does.
Right. Right. So there certainly are, information out there as far as okay. How much to prune and stuff. And as I mentioned, that booklet actually is really quite handy to have.
Okay.
And your other question was, it's about the lilacs and stuff. And you really can do a pretty hard prune on those. We're getting kind of late here. Normally we'd prune them right after they flower.
No, okay.
Yeah,
well,
normally,
I'm no big hurry about that sort of thing. I just I get in the place where eventually, you know, there won't be any leaves in front of the window.
They're pretty getting pretty big. But next year after they flower, you can really do a pretty hard prune on those because lilacs are pretty good about actually suckering up from the bottom
as
well.
Yeah, I learned that. The reason I'm calling is I had a hedge on the other side of the house. It was quite tall, but it looked very nice and an incredible amount of butterflies. My wife said, I'm going to cut that back. Well, I now call her slash and burn. when she took something about 7 feet tall back down to about four, and all I'm getting is sucker. I guess I'd call them sucker growth, and all they do is come out in very limber and thin limbs, and they all fall down on the ground. And so that's become a sticky point with us now. And
we won't
from now on,
up.
I'm pruning. You know, I certainly don't want to over prune. That's for sure. You know, it was a nice looking thing, but it's not anymore.
I'm not even going to get in between that one.
Yeah, I just want to get some professional advice on the next two things, so I'll just wait till the proper time and take care of it.
Sure.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Sandy Mason. She is horticulture educator and relationship counselor with the University of Illinois
support group.
Extension. Yeah, we have support groups for people who have weeds, for people who have rabbits, for people who have had pruning mishaps, and any additional group. Well, if you got a problem, we'll form a group for you. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And next we'll talk with someone in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I would like to address your rabbit problem.
Okay.
I had a rabbit problem, too, until a stray cat came into our yard.
Yeah.
We caught her, took her to have had her spayed, got her shots, made a place for her to sleep and feed her, and we don't have any rabbits.
Yeah. That's certainly, and I've heard people mention that before, either dogs or cats.
We get rabbits.
Pardon?
We get rabbit parts.
Oh, ooh.
I know. David probably isn't bothered by that too much.
Yeah, he probably isn't
bothered by
that.
Not in the least. In fact, if I had some way of attracting a bobcat to the yard, I think that would be good. That would be good.
But we hadn't that in mind when we kept her here. We just made her a very nice house to live in, and it's just done wonders.
Yeah. The only reason I'm a little hesitant with that to really openly recommend that is that there is a lot of problem with wildcats eating birds, and they really can wreak havoc on a lot of our songbirds as far as the either raiding the nests and eating baby birds. So I'm a little hesitant. I know exactly what you're saying. You're excited that the rabbits are gone, but
she catches a bird now and then, but she's not that fast, and she never catches a squirrel if she tries. But, you know, maybe three or four times a year she'll catch a bird, but we have hundreds of birds. We should be sending money to feed children in foreign nations instead of feeding so many birds. But
the birds are well fed, though, so that's good.
Yeah. I have a rose bush that did beautifully around my bird bath for a number of years, and now it gets these little tight, little knotty-looking flowers, and that's all. Think it's just sort of run its course and I should put a new one in.
So it never, the flowers don't open or the buds don't open?
They just sort of open. They look gnarled. It's kind of one of those ground cover small bushy roses.
And it's growing okay? It's just the flower.
It grows, it gets new growth, but the buds just knot up and it just doesn't look right. I've tried fertilizer, I've tried garlic spray, and just various things to...
Have you ever opened up one of the buds just to kind of look and see if there's something in there?
No, maybe there's something in there. Good idea.
Yeah, sometimes we actually can get some little caterpillar-like guys or something that'll actually get inside the buds and actually feed inside the bud, and you don't really notice it. The buds kind of dry up or...
These look really strange.
Yeah, I would, or you might want to, you know, bring some in to your extension office. I can't remember what city you're from, but
Urbana.
Oh, okay, great. Well, then you can just come down to the Champaign County Extension office. We're out at Country Fair Drive, and just bring us a sample. We'd be glad to look at it and see if we can figure out what's going on.
Well, thank you, and David, I hope you can find a cat.
Well, that would be okay, I guess. Maybe I could attract large birds of prey.
There you go. I like that idea. There you go.
Well, if falcon. Help, if you throw meat scraps out, that does.
Oh, well, there you go. There's a good idea.
Thank you for these suggestions.
You need a falcon. I could see you out there with a falcon on your arm.
Now, there is an idea. I got to look into that. Let's go to a cell phone here, line number two. Hello. Yes, hi.
We probably confused him.
Comments earlier about rabbits reminded me I have deer, raccoons, and rabbits.
Oh.
And an abundance of all.
You're blessed.
Yeah. In fact, one time last winter, I counted 23 deer in our yard.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Sandy, any ideas? Do people build fences? And how high must they be? I mean, what else can you do? Frankly, it's gotten to a point where I don't have a garden and vegetable garden because the flowers are in an area that is fenced in because that's the only way we can do anything. They will eat. Deer will eat hosta. They eat absolutely everything.
Right. And you're absolutely right. This is, from what I've seen is people, you can try the repellents. There certainly are deer repellents out there. Again, with that many deer, if you have that high of a population, they're probably going to eat right through it anyway. But, you know, it'd be worth a try. Unfortunately, back to the whole fencing thing. And I know that isn't an excited thing because you really have to have a fairly high fence when it comes to deer. There's been some indication that actually laying the fence kind of on the ground, they don't like stepping on it, evidently, is one of the things I've heard. And that might be something to try. It isn't, obviously, it's maybe a little bit more aesthetically pleasing than having this, you know, huge fence. And that might be something to try.
That would be worth a try. I can put that around some flowers and see if even that would help.
But, yeah.
I for years I had a garden, but it just got to a point where the population of raccoons would get the corn about the night before I was ready to pick it.
There are lists of deer-resistant plants, and I think that's for a lot of folks that are in those areas, they've kind of gone more and more to deer-resistant plants.
Yeah, I've tried, I've done some reading on that. I've also tried a product called Tree Guard, I thought it was helping until I noticed all of my Japanese ferns had been eaten. Okay,
right.
Well, we'll resort to a fence. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you.
Boy, it's Wildlife Day.
Well, it's a problem. It's a serious problem.
It is a serious problem.
All right, well, let's go on to caller here. Let's see, what do we got next? Line number one, caller on cell phone. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Mine's about lilacs again. My question is, we had this lovely lilac. It's an artificial lilac bush that's every year been more beautiful. And then this year, it sent out the queerest little shoots of leaves, but they just, like, were stunted, and the flowers were stunted. And I asked somebody, and they said, well, they came out and looked at me, and they said, well, the plant's fine. It's just maybe if you trim it back in the fall a lot that you will... it'll come back, but it looks like kind of twigs with just kind of their little short leaves coming out of it. Do you ever hear of anything like that?
No, not right offhand. That doesn't sound familiar to me, it's particularly on lilacs. Have you used any, you know, herbicides within your lawn or anything like that?
No,
where you might have gotten some drip?
I fertilized it about a month ago with some 12, but it didn't seem to make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just clear. Can you hear me on this cell phone?
Yeah, it's fine.
Just fine. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I guess I would probably, it's definitely one of those things I'd be thinking about bringing it into your local extension office and having somebody take a look at it. The University of Illinois Plant Clinic is also available for folks if they want to send samples in. It's $12.50 for a sample or take samples down there. So there's certainly lots of things. It might be one of those things you really want to look into to see if there's really something going on with this or it just happens to be that particular plant that particular year. And again, on lilacs, I wouldn't prune them. If the person said to prune them in the fall, if you prune them in the fall, you're cutting off all the flower buds. So just keep that in mind. So.
Oh, well, thanks. It is too bad because it's right by our front door and it was so lovely. It was such a nice bush and now it's just, oh, well, who do I call at the university?
There's the University of Illinois Plant Clinic. Yeah,
okay.
The University of Illinois Plant Clinic, or if you look in your phone book under, it's usually under University of Illinois or your county that you live in, there's an extension office associated with your county, and every county in Illinois has an extension office associated with it.
Okay.
And you can contact them, and they can either get you in touch with a plant clinic, or a lot of folks have master gardeners, and they can help you out, those kind of things.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Thank
Bye.
You. Well, we're going to have to stop, and I'm sorry we have some people we cannot take. Sandy will be back here on this program in a month, so that'll be another opportunity to ask questions. In the meantime, as she says, no matter where you are in the state, there should be an extension person near you that can answer similar mm-hmm. questions. And if you are somewhere within the coverage area of our television station, WYLL-TV, we have a program that's on every week that's called Illinois Gardener. It's on Thursday nights at 7. It's a live show, and there is the opportunity also to call in and ask questions. They have an ever-shifting group of, and shifty mm-hmm. sometimes, group of panelists, sometimes including Sandy, and other folks from the university and people who work in places where they sell plants and do landscaping around Champaign-Urbana. So the folks who have a lot of experience with plants, so that's another opportunity. So 7 o'clock, Thursday nights, Illinois Gardener, WYLL-TV. You can tune in there and learn some stuff and ask some questions. And in the meantime, thanks very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Our program here, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Also, the programming made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. Classes are ongoing. Individuals may start anytime. For more information, call 384-5829 or visit their website at www.livingyogacenter.net. We're going to take a break, as we usually do. We'll have news, then more of Focus. First, though, an update on the commodity markets.
And good morning, everyone. This is Dave Dickey with a look at the commodity markets on this day. We can start in the wheat pit, as we usually do, with the July contract, 335 and three quarters, down 3 1/4. September, 343, down 2 1/2. July corn at 243 1/4, down 1 1/4. September, 246 1/2, down 1 1/2. December, 253 1/4, down 1. March, 261, down 1. July soybeans, 912, down 25. August, 774 1/2, down 11 1/2. November, 638, down 3. July